The U.S. Catholic Bishops A Fortnight for Freedom initiative begins Friday, June 21st, on the eve of the feast of Saints Thomas More and John Fisher, models of faithful public service and church leadership, who were martyred for the faith. Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, who heads the USCCB's Committee on Religious Liberty, told Chris Altieri the Bishop's Initiative seeks to make a specifically Catholic contribution to an issue that touches the whole people and even reaches beyond the nation.
If you want anything important in your life or in the life of the church, you got to pray for it. If you want vocations, you pray for them. If you want to preserve religious freedom and human rights, that has to be the subject of prayer. Unless the Lord builds the house, we labor in vain who build it. So prayer is the mainspring of our efforts to defend religious freedom. And so that's why we begin the fortnight with a Mass here in Baltimore, end it with a Mass. And much of what happens in between, in this two-week period, has to do with prayer rallies, with scripture reading, rosaries, and many other things in which we're really beseeching the God who authored our freedom to help us defend our freedom.
There has been, and there continues to be, in the United States, some considerable public rethinking about the relationship of the state to civil society in general, and the role of religion in public life more specifically. How does the church understand her public role in the United States?
Well, first of all, the gospel where Jesus says, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and what belongs to God, give to God, that remains normative for us. The church recognizes the legitimate autonomy of the state. The church recognizes that the state may not impose religion or any system of belief, really, upon its citizens. But conversely, the church rightly believes that the state must respect the church and the beliefs of the church, the structure of the church, and the right of the church to go about its ministries according to its own teaching. And also the church believes that while church and state are separate, they are nonetheless interrelated because they must cooperate for the common good. Right now, those things which seem to be sort of fixed points in how people thought about church-state relations are kind of up for grabs because they are being questioned by an aggressive secularism that would like to diminish the role of religion in public life, and also by some government policies here in the United States.
Why all of the concern over might seem like a semantic thing? You know, why the concern over religious liberty versus freedom of worship? Is there a real difference?
There is a concerted effort on the part of an aggressive, even militant secularism to reduce freedom of religion to the freedom to worship as one thinks proper. And there is a big difference. It's not merely semantic. Freedom of worship means, yes, you can pray in the privacy of your room. Yes, you can go to your church or synagogue or mosque as you may wish. But when it comes to taking the truths and values that flow from your faith and worship and bringing them to bear upon public life or upon the conduct of your daily business or upon how the church serves the larger society, well, then that's said to be a different matter. That's something that ought to be trimmed, even disallowed. And so you can see there is a big difference between religious freedom construed merely as a freedom of worship and religious freedom construed as the ability to live and practice your faith in not only your personal life, but in public.
You talked about the concerted efforts of a militant secularism. Is there a specific, are there any specific examples of that militancy at work right now with which the bishops are perhaps particularly concerned?
The most famous example of this would be the Health and Human Services mandate. This is the mandate that is part of the Affordable Health Care Act. It mandates that virtually all employers must provide certain so-called preventive services, which would include abortifacient, sterilization, contraception, and reproductive counseling. And according to Health and Human Services, the church can be divided between a worship wing and what we'll call a service wing. The worship wing, parishes, for example, are exempt. The service wing, schools, hospitals, Catholic charities and the like, are not exempt. They are accommodated, but the accommodation itself ends up implicating our Catholic institutions in providing, funding, facilitating these prohibitive services in our health care insurance plans. That would be one, but there are others as well.
Let me ask you this, just as a, if I could play the devil's advocate here for a second. There is tension, isn't there? I mean, within the Catholic way of looking at things itself, between a desire or a tendency to present itself as the sort of the moral proxy for the larger society on the one hand, and the tendency to say, oh, well, no, we do things the way that we do them, and we'll shut ourselves off and become reclusive and live as a society apart. Now, neither of those extremes, I think, is particularly attractive, at least not to me. But have we maybe had a hard time finding a way to manage that that the tension between those two poles?
I think Pope Benedict struck precisely the right balance in his encyclical Deus Caritas Est, where he said there are three things that manifest the deepest nature of the Church. One is the proclamation of the Word. Number two is the celebration of the sacraments. And the third is charity. Charity that is done at the parish level, the personal level, and the organized diocesan level, and indeed at the international level. These are three interrelated aspects of the Church's life. And what religious freedom means, at least in part, is that the Church should have the freedom to take the truths, the values, the understanding of human dignity that comes from faith and worship, and to let those things inform the way she accomplishes her marvelous charitable and educational works locally and around the world. That's what religious freedom is. If you're not able to do that, then you don't have real religious freedom. The Church, from her very beginnings, has been involved in serving the wider community. How wise Pope Francis warned against our becoming a self-referential church. If we reduce freedom of worship, freedom of religion, to being only freedom of worship, we will become that self-referential church against which Pope Francis has warned us.
Archbishop Lurie, I really appreciate you giving us your time here. I want to give you the last word. If there's anything that we haven't mentioned that you think bears mention about this, I'd ask you to go ahead now.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that as one who has been working on religious liberty on behalf of the bishops, I'd like to say how thankful I am for the strong leadership of all the bishops and the unity that we enjoy. I'd also like to thank literally the hundreds and thousands of Catholics who are involved in this struggle. And I would also like to thank our ecumenical and interfaith partners who are also seeking the same religious liberty that the Catholic Church is. It's not just a Catholic issue. It is really a very important issue for the good of democracy in the United States and indeed around the world. So it's really a joy and a privilege to be involved, even if only in a little way, in defending religious freedom.